MSW Media.
So, Renato, is there something sketchy about this Trump Media IPO thing?
It's complicated. So, Asha, this has been quite a week in terms of Donald Trump's net worth. His net worth absolutely surged because there was an IPO of a company called Trump Media, which is essentially just like a holding company, shell company that holds like Truth Social. And it's an odd thing. It surged to be worth many billions, several billion dollars, massively inflating Trump's net worth. And yet the underlying company is like got three employees, no profits, like 50 something million in revenues. Like it's a very, very small company. There's probably companies in your hometown that are significantly larger and aren't selling for several billion dollars. And really what it is Trump's essentially created a meme stock, like how GameStop or Bed Bath & Beyond, some of these companies had these inflated values because a bunch of people on the internet, message boards, Discord and Reddit would like, you know, talk each other into bumping up the price. Essentially, that happened here. And Trump's followers and his supporters basically pumped up the price as a way of trying to pump up Trump, effectively ballooning his net worth and creating a lot of, I would say, legal complications that are going to be interesting for us to talk about today.
I mean, it's sort of like a kind of stock market GoFundMe is what it feels like.
Yeah, well, you know, the irony is if you did a GoFundMe for your campaign and you're like, okay, I'm just going to do a GoFundMe, that would be a problem if you weren't following specific requirements, right? You have to ask certain information from people to get, you know, identifying information because you need to make sure that they're not, for example, giving over their contribution limit to a campaign.
I was going to say there's contribution limits.
Exactly.
Which is what, like, it's like not that high. It's like 2,700, something like that.
Yeah, it's in the it's a four digit number.
Yes.
And so it's much if you could imagine somebody buying $50,000 or $100,000 of Trump Media stock, maybe even a foreign person, perhaps somebody who could not otherwise be contributing to a presidential campaign directly. And so, you know, here, though, Trump's going to say, hey, this is not a GoFundMe for my campaign. We're launching the best media company of all time, right? Just like there's, you know, Trump Ice and Trump Steaks and Trump Bibles. Now there's a Trump Media stock and you can get it for billions of dollars. And I think it's interesting to me because I have spent time thinking about and talking about the whole meme stock, you know, it was a GameStop was the first stock I think this happened to, but a meme stock trend where you essentially, you know, in that case, you would have people on, let's say, Discord or Reddit getting together and saying, let's all buy GameStop to stick it to the man or whatever, and dramatically inflate the prices. And often the instigators would sell high and then they would let the price plummet. And of course, we're already starting to see that happen. Trump, you know, we're recording this on Monday. Trump's net worth has already tumbled $1 billion because the media stock went really far down once the actual underlying financials became public.
Yeah. So this seems kind of both like a genius move by Trump and then really risky and stupid. Genius in the sense that his, you know, lemming-like followers will, you know, contribute money, which they've been doing for forever. And as you noted, this could be a conduit for people to contribute money to him and his campaign around particular kinds of restrictions or limits that might otherwise exist. On the other hand, this puts Trump squarely in the crosshairs of a regulatory agency. And particularly, it puts his accounting and valuation practices, et cetera, under the purview of the SEC. And given his track record, this does not sound like a good, like, this sounds like bad idea genes for Trump.
Yeah, there's no question that he's gotten a lot of legal advice around this, because one thing that they did is they made clear on the front end they weren't disclosing much, and what they disclosed was pretty bad. Okay, it's not like they're painting some rosy picture of this company, like it's soaring. Maybe it's soaring like the Hindenburg was soaring, but not going anywhere that you'd want it to go very fast. And so, realistically, this is not the sort of company that you'd invest in if you were thinking hard or wanted to make money or careful with how you invested. And so if Trump really can put his name on any company and it's going to skyrocket in value because a lot of people are just going to buy it for, because his name is on it to pump him up or whatever, there may be an element of genius to him, but it just shows how empty it all is. Ironically, Trump has sold the idea of himself being rich. And then the only way he is rich now, it appears, is by the whole image, right?
By selling the idea of himself as rich. By the way, your pumping it up phrase reminded me of, remember the old SNL skit?
I want to pump you up.
I want to pump you up. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's something called pump and dump. Let's talk about this because people have been discussing this on Twitter and the internet and saying, oh, it's a pump and dump scheme. So what's a pump and dump scheme? Usually, you do this with, let's say, a penny stock, something that's easily manipulated, where you convince people with false statements, usually, to dramatically invest heavily in a stock, claiming it's going to have some major returns, usually promising some sort of return or forecasting some sort of return, without disclosing the fact that you own a lot of shares in that stock, potentially. Failing to disclose that to the person you're trying to get involved, trying to entice. And then once the stock price gets inflated, then you dump, you sell high, and you let them deal with the losses as, the market reacts to this artificially high price. There is an argument that that is exactly what's been happening in the case of, let's say, GameStop and other companies where there are these massive valuations that did not appear, AMC's another one, theaters, that did not appear connected to the underlying fundamentals. But there's a definitely different side of it. First of all, it's very hard to prove what some random person on an internet message board believed or didn't believe. These people are typically unsophisticated. Some made money, some didn't. And some of the people who made the most money were not instigators. They just happened to be along for the ride. But also, these people, I think, believe sometimes that they are kind of making their voices heard. Like, they love theater, so they want to support AMC or whatever it might be. It's like a way of voting with their dollar. And here, of course, Trump supporters are going to say, yeah, I'm doing this to support, the man who's saving America or whatever they believe.
Isn't the penny stock pump and dump, isn't that how the Wolf of Wall Street guy got rich initially?
At least in the movie, yes. I don't remember.
Yeah, totally,
I don't remember.
Like, basing my entire knowledge of that story on the movie.
But same.
Yeah, I remember they were like in a garage, and he had a bunch of people calling and enticing people to invest in these penny stocks.
Right, and it's just, so
you don't have to go up that much in a penny stock if you're bought. It's like the delta is so little, I assume, right? That if
that's
you're,
right.
If it's such a cheap stock, you buy it, and then it only has to go up a little bit for you to make a lot of money if you've invested a lot in it.
Correct, and that's the point, and it's an excellent one. I don't know enough about his case outside of the movie, but I do practice a lot in this area. I represent people, and this is a lot of what I do as a lawyer. If you can hear Henry, he's also got very strong feelings about pump and dump,
I was going to make a joke there, but I'm not going to.
Probably not. Yeah, Bark. Oh, geez. But in any event, I'm not going to make any jokes of my own. But what I the point I'm making, though, is very important that you are getting at is, if you want to do a pump and dump scheme, you want something that it's easy for you to inflate the price. It's so you want something that's what's called illiquid. In other words, it's not something that has tons of money and people trading all the time. So for example, if you're like, I want to manipulate the price of Amazon or Microsoft or something, like these are very massive companies. And to do that would require, like to try to influence the price would require a massive level of investment. So it's easier to do with stocks that aren't traded well. The reason that it was, you know, worked so well for some of the stocks that I mentioned earlier is at the time there were some feelings, you know, the conventional wisdom was that, let's say, during a pandemic, maybe AMC wasn't the right company to buy or whatever. Here in this case, obviously, there's a lot of reasons why Truth Social, which I think is basically the main asset of Trump Media, is not really a great investment. But, you know, obviously his people view that differently, his supporters.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, they could just say, I believe in this brand.
That's right.
The brand is him.
100%. And for a lot of those people, that is how they view it. And obviously they're going to, you know, whatever. I mean, it's, you know, when you and I talked recently, you mentioned Trump Bible. It's the same thing. If by having Trump's association with the product is enough for you to spend $60 for something that you could basically get for free, so be it. But in this case, it definitely has an impact. You know, we spent all this time talking about the Trump bond issue. One thing we haven't discussed, because we're not really a political podcast in any way, is obviously there's been a lot of disparity in campaign, fundraising, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Biden just had this massive fundraiser. He's outraising Trump by a huge margin. Well, this is one way to counteract that. If Trump doesn't just pocket the money, because he always says he's going to self-finance and never actually does.
Yeah. And plus he's got a lot of legal bills. Can we talk about the Bibles for a second?
Sure.
Because it seems to me that the Bibles are also an excellent vehicle, if you will, for other contributors who would not be able to contribute to political campaigns to funnel money to him. So for example, if I'm a 501c3 Church of Asha, tax exempt, I'm not, as far as I understand it, able to contribute directly to political parties or political campaigns. However, if I bought 1,000 Trump Bibles, I could put that as a big business expense, correct?
I'm not a tax lawyer, but that I could see how one could make that argument. Let's put it that way.
I mean, is the IRS separately really going to come in and say, no, you can't buy a Trump Bible. You have to buy a no brand Bible. Like, no, they're not.
Yeah. The other thing too, is if it's really something that's so associated with Trump, you know, you're also not supposed to be bringing a partisan message inside of a church or another sort of nonprofit. You could imagine using Trump Bibles or other Trump merchandise as a way around that, right? If it's like branded Christian merchandise. It is, of course, I'll just say, as you know, from my perspective, it's also very anti-Christian, okay, to be wrapping Christ in the American flag and all of this. I mean, it is really...
Well, did you see his Easter message?
You mean
Happy Easter to all the haters and losers or whatever? I mean,
you meant on Truth Social?
Yeah.
No, I did not. I thought you were going to refer to Saturday Night Live thing.
No.
It was Bible. It was made out of 100% Bible.
No, it was kind of a ranty. It was very long.
He has a lot to say on Easter. Like, I was spending the time with my family. You know, my mom made some great food. I don't know what's going on. I guess him.
Well,
him
I think Ron Filipowski had a theory that it's like literally the one day where even his followers pay attention to something else besides him and someone else besides him. And he just couldn't handle it.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. He's got a lot of time in his hands. That's for sure. It's unbelievable.
So back to the stock issue. So, I mean, as you noted, his worth, you know, the worth of this company, value of this company fell dramatically today. So, you know, the stock market, it seems to me, if everyone's on the up and up and providing actual information about accurate information about, you know, what, you know, their profits, et cetera, should self-correct in the sense that, you know, unless, like you said, like there are people who just really believe in the brand and really think it's going to go up. I mean, at some point it's going to reach some equilibrium. So doesn't that eventually, in other words, how much is this going to really help him with the money raising? Because it feels like, you know, you have this initial exuberance, then at some point, even the most ardent supporter has to be a rational investor. I mean, to some degree, your average, you know, investor, and say, how much money am I actually going to put into this without some anticipation that I'm actually going to get a return? Because otherwise, you might as well just go to Vegas.
Well, or not. I mean, that may, it may be that they just view the money as thrown away, and it's a, the purpose of it is to support Trump. It's like buying a Trump coin or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen all that Trump memorabilia. I think not even sold by him, right? Just like buy your Trump coin or whatever. I think, you know, just so everyone understands, I mean, typically what stocks are is they're very tiny ownership interest in companies. And typically the price of stocks is very much focused on the fundamentals, like, you know, revenue, profit, what, you know, what assets the company has and so on, because ultimately you're buying a small, tiny percentage of that when you buy the stock. And you're right. Like there's smart fundamental investors who are looking at this and are like, okay, that's why the price, it literally went down 21% today. Why? Because all the smart money people were like, okay, now we're going to short the stock. In other words, we're going to sell it even if we don't own it and bet on it going down because it's so obviously overvalued. That's true. The problem can be, and this has happened with some of the other meme stocks. So that's why I find this an interesting subject is sometimes what happens is, let's say, you know, the price of GameStop goes up, you know, 100% more than it's worth or 200% more than it's worth. And people, smart people are shorting it, but then it keeps going up and up and up. And they are facing paper losses that are significant. Like how long when there's irrationality do people wait? Now, it looks like it's already correcting here. But if the price kept going up and up and up, like how many people does Trump just have who don't care like about losing money? How much money are they willing to throw away? It may not be that much. And that's really an interesting test here.
Yeah. And I wonder how much those people really understand. And this would actually be a totally great troll by Biden. Is that ultimately if this is a way to raise money, particularly to post the bond in the New York civil fraud case, and if there's like really no realistic way he's going to succeed on the merits, I mean, he's going to owe something at the end of the day, I think, even if they lower the final judgment. What those people are really doing is handing money over to the state of New York. Right?
That is true.
They're literally handing money to the state of New York.
It's crazy because they're handing money to the state of New York and to, it looks like, to Trump's lawyers. I mean, the legal fees that I'm sure you saw the same, the numbers I have, they're astronomical.
I didn't see the numbers. What are they?
They were saying something like he's paying like six figures a day or something like that in legal fees. I just can't imagine that that's accurate. That's insane. I mean, that's a lot of money a day to be paying in legal fees. And I'm saying this as somebody who, you know, has a very large
who has a high hourly rate.
Yeah, very high hourly rate, who has, you know, millions of, in business in, as a lawyer. But I 100,000 a day, right? That's what is that? What is that? Like 3 million a month to that 36 something million a year. That's a lot of money to be outlaying at, you know, for, you know, for a company that's not, this is not, that's the legal spend of a Fortune, you know, 500 company.
Well,
or whatever.
When you're facing 88 criminal counts, have 3 major civil suits against you, 3 civil damages awards totaling over $500 million, you need a lot of lawyers.
Yeah. No, it's very, I mean, it's very significant. I mean, it's very significant, but it's just a handful of cases. That's the thing that's amazing about it to me. In other words, Fortune 500 company, that, you know, they may have a litigation budget of 20 something million a year, But like that's like facing lawsuits in all 50 states and tons of people slipping and falling in your stores or whatever. Like, this is not that. This is just like a handful of cases. So the Alina Hoppus of the world must be living large.
Except he doesn't pay his lawyers.
Well, that where is all this money going? It's an excellent. I mean, I think there's going to be some reckoning here, but that's why I say this actually is complicated, because on its face, if you want to totally disclose to people that this is a worthless stock and people will buy it anyway, and you take the money, I suppose you could do that. But where is the ending? What's the end game here? Obviously the end game for a lot of us is like, okay, we don't have much of a democracy anymore, but you know, is this a sort of, it almost seems to me like it's sort of a kind of a shell game of sorts, right? Like at a certain point,
a Ponzi
does the music
scheme?
Run out? Yeah. Doesn't the money run out? Doesn't the music stop at some point? People are like, okay, we're not going to just keep pouring money into this, or is this its own secular religion?
Well, I think that part of the problem is that for many of the biggest donors, maybe where the return comes isn't in the stock, but it's in the policies that they foresee Trump being able to deliver on if he becomes president. And whether that's policies or whether it's judges who will further the agenda behind these policies, maybe even another Supreme Court justice, you know, it could very well be worth the investment, even on a loss in the short run on kind of the accounting books, could be a big win in the long run in terms of what they get on actual laws that are on books.
Well, and that's, you know, that's a reason why we have campaign finance laws and why we also have ethical norms that we have where presidents put their properties in a blind trust or something like that, so that they're their assets, so that this way they're not swayed. I mean, you can imagine here what happens if a billionaire, defense contractor, whoever, foreign entity buys a massive position in Trump media. Is Trump beholden to that person? What influence does that person have on, let's say, the president of the United States? I mean, it's a sort of thing that is very concerning and something that we've never seen before, which I guess seems like old hat now for us. It's like every week we get something like that, but it's really something.
Well, it will be interesting to see how this all unfolds.
So, Asha, we go from pump and dump to gagging.
I'm not laughing. That was not a funny situation, but it's just so outrageous. It's really hard to have a reaction. And let's clue our listeners into what we're talking, listeners and viewers into what we're talking about. I mean, I think it made a lot of headlines, so maybe people know.
Right. So first of all, two separate things happened, right? On Truth Social, Trump attacked the daughter of the judge who's overseeing his criminal case in Manhattan, if I recall correctly. And then in addition to that, he posted imagery of the president, Joe Biden, like tied up. Was he hogtied in the back of a truck or something like that?
It was a truck. And then the back panel of the truck, you know, the part that comes down into the flatbed, that was painted. So if you're looking straight on, it was painted with a perspective as though Biden was laying in the flatbed of the truck.
Got it.
Bound and gagged.
So I'm gonna have a provocative take on both of these. Okay. I can already tell. I can just already see the angry comments from listeners. The Biden image, horrible, reprehensible, objectionable, but totally First Amendment protected under current case law. Nothing you can do about that. It's a sort of rough speech that is protected. But it's not a true threat. In other words, it's not something that is meant, that is, it's very narrowly defined where you're saying, okay, I am going to come to your house and shoot you, or please, let's all meet together at Joe Biden's house and shoot him, that sort of thing. Okay. Obviously, I'm giving you an example. I'm not making one myself. Okay. And just so we're clear for the Secret Service listening to this podcast. But separately, I would also say about the judge threat, I do think that's more serious in my mind. And I think it's very alarming because of, and we should talk about the interview that we just had of a sitting judge, which was sort of remarkable, on CNN. I've never seen that before. A sitting judge talking about threats to safety that he's faced since he's handled January 6 cases. But while that is very serious, the gag order didn't cover the judge and his family specifically. I think under New York law, there's very limited ability. From my understanding is from talking to friends who are licensed in New York, there's very limited ability for the judge to, you know, enforce conditions of release like that in a way that will result in imprisonment. So a lot of the discussion of like throw Trump in jail or do this and that, you're not really able to do under New York law without actually having a trial and so on. So it's interesting because I think what it shows to me is a kind of a flaw with the system that we have, or a result, a side product of the First Amendment and free speech, neither of which I think is going to make anyone feel very satisfied here.
Okay. So let's unpack everything you just said. I don't disagree with most of it. I will say this. I agree with you that the picture of Biden, the painting of him on the back of the truck, is protected speech. However, I anticipate that that owner of that truck might get a call or a visit from Secret Service. You don't have to be in, you know, violation of the law. You can still exercise your First Amendment rights, but that doesn't mean that it's not something that law enforcement might go check out. I mean, if I went around on my street screaming, Trump should die, which I don't think he should, just for the record, as a hypothetical example, if I were to do that, I think I could reasonably expect a visit from the Secret Service, because that would just be, you know, even though it's my right to say that, that's just how it is. However, I know there were a lot of people on Twitter and social media that were like, Trump should get a visit from Secret Service. Hello, people. He is protected by Secret Service. He's not going to get a visit by Secret Service. And I think this is just the reality that we need to understand, is that, like it or not, and I don't like it, I really don't love that he posted that on his social media account. I think it's incitement in a way. Like, I mean, I think it's problematic in a number of, levels, and especially in the climate that we're in, especially the actions that his followers have taken in the past. And it could encourage violence. But I think the reality is, and I don't know if you agree, I just don't think that that is going to touch him in any meaningful way.
I agree with that. I pretty much agree with what you said. I think that people who are looking for courts to enforce speech restrictions on Trump and for that to somehow result in anything, I think are wasting their time. There are a lot of good reasons why courts have been reluctant to do that in any context, to restrain people from speaking. And with good reason, courts view that those sorts of things with a lot of skepticism. Really, from my perspective, that is the sort of stuff that Trump does that is very problematic, but it is the sort of thing that is low on my list of things to be outraged about, because our system is set up for that sort of to deal with that by, and it's really through more speech or different speech or that sort of thing. I have no problem deplatforming him, as Twitter did before it was purchased by Elon Musk. You could do that if that's your platform, that's what you want to do. But I don't think under the First Amendment that trying to fight his speech is going to get you anywhere. In fact, I actually think that Trump is like a professional troll. And in many ways, his campaign is a troll. And he wants to get a reaction. He wants to provoke a reaction, whether it's from the media, the libs, as he would call them, or whatever. And I think creating this sort of reaction, it actually fuels him. And I would advise judges and others to just not even react to it, because I don't I don't think
it helps. I don't know. I mean, I think it's worth calling out. And I'll just, by the way, because this really made me mad. I always think about this, that I, you know, at the beginning of Trump's presidency, there were a couple of incidents that occurred. I don't know if you remember the Kathy Griffin incident where she held up, you know, some like severed head and it was supposed to be, I don't remember what the details were, but she got canceled like over it. Right. Because it was like all insightful and, you know, and she's a comedian, P.S. And then even more outrageously, I felt like the Public Theater at the time in New York was doing a Shakespeare in the Park production of Julius Caesar. And they modernized the production and the actor, the character for Julius Caesar wore a suit. He had blonde hair and a red tie. And spoiler alert, in Julius Caesar, he gets assassinated in the end by Brutus.
What?
Yeah. So
spoiler alert.
This became, I mean, go look it up. Just Google Trump, Julius Caesar, Shakespeare in the Park, New York. And this will come up. It was like Cancel Fest 2017. Delta pulled their sponsorship. There was another like major sponsor that pulled it. It was like, oh, you're advocating assassinating Trump. I mean, I don't know. Like to me, this is not a legal issue. It's just like a hypocrisy and cultural issue. Like I feel like what's good for the goose should be good for the gander. And to me, it's very rich that that was the outrage at the time. And yet, you know, over the years, we've seen, you know, not only this, but even when he, you know, after it was either when he was running for president or right after, I don't know if you remember, there was the gif that he posted of like Hillary Clinton being hit with a baseball like or something while she was boarding a plane. I mean, there's been a lot of violent imagery, I guess, is my point, against other, you know, political people. With the. Can I just say something about the gag order real quick? Yeah, as you noted, I read the gag order and the judge modeled it after Judge Chutkan's gag order. So he exempted himself and exempted the prosecutor. And I think it covers children of the staff and other counsel. So I guess what you're saying is because he excluded himself, it, I guess, by default excluded attacks on his own daughter, which is weird. But to your point about the enforcement, I just want to note again, I have like the memory of an elephant, so I will continue to bring up these old things. The first pardon that Trump ever gave, if you'll recall, was to Joe Arpaio, who had been convicted for contempt of court. And I just feel like there's this whole, I mean, I could write a thesis on like the psychological projections of the kinds of offenses for which Trump has granted pardons. And I think it was really telling at the time that he felt that that offense merited a pardon. And here we are.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I mean, I think, by the way, just to kind of go to your example of the Shakespeare in the Park, or Kathy Griffin, I totally agree that people should be outraged. They should talk about it in that regard. Do whatever they're going to do. Deplatforming can work if that's possible. But I would advise, if I was the law clerk to the judge, I would say you should be like Honey Badger, like you don't care. You're moving forward. Nothing he says or does distracts you from the case. And I think when judge when the judge in the New York AG civil case reacted and created, don't you feel that Egeron, don't you feel Egeron. that almost Trump loved that? Cause it was almost like pulling the judge down from the dais and into his arena in his own city.
I loved it. He was like, you know, strike one, $5,000. Few weeks later, strike two, $10,000. Like, why not? I mean, come on, Renato. Like, I disagree with the ignore it and it'll go away. We have tried to ignore it and go away, and it doesn't go away. Like, you have to call it out. And even if I think even if it's a symbolic gesture. I think in all of these respects, we have to have our institutions do what they do. I mean, I was always for impeachment, even though I knew he was going to be convicted and removed. I think there is value to showing that we are that our institutions are going to try to hold him accountable. And you're right. The fact it's not going to matter maybe in his case, but I think to shrug and say like, oh, we give up or we're just going to ignore him, I don't think that helps the situation.
I think with the judge has a lot of power in the courtroom. And I think that's where the judge should exercise his power, her power, depending on which of the cases we're talking about. And, you know, judges in a lot of trials, they make it you learn very quickly which, whether you're upsetting the judge or not based on the judge's rulings. And I mean, there are judges where I'm always trying to earn brownie points, and I'm trying to make sure that the judge is on my client's side or not, not against my client or whatever. And you tell, you start getting all these evidentiary rulings or other things that go your way. I would be trying, if I was a judge, to be sending signals to the attorneys through my rulings. And because I'm above that, I issue orders. I don't issue tweets. I issue orders. If I'm a judge, right?
Well, then why wouldn't you order him in contempt?
Because he doesn't care about the $5,000. For him, he got more than $5,000 in publicity. You gotta find something that matters. That's my take on it.
We can agree to disagree. So, Renato, before we go, speaking of contempt, I am in a spat with my homeowners association, my condo in Vermont. And it's really interesting. I'm just kind of living my life, being a good citizen, paying my fees, whatever. And there's a professor named Brian Klass who's written a book called Corruptible. Good read.
Okay. Is this about homeowners association?
Well, he actually talks about, how power corrupts. But one of the examples that he uses is this homeowners association, which basically became like this little mini like dictatorship, like authoritarian regime where they went around like fining people and like, taking control over all of their whatever decisions and stuff. So I feel like I'm in that kind of situation and I'm pushing back.
Okay, so how are you pushing back? And what happened? What's the situation?
It's a really long story, but basically I live in somehow I ended up buying like the one condominium where I always understood from property law, by the way, at Yale, that when you buy a condominium, you own the space and like the condominium association pays for all of the structural repairs, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why you pay the fees. Not so apparently in mine, where the owners are responsible for like all of the structural repairs, including like replacing the siding and replacing the deck. I mean, it's like craziness. Okay. So it's already incredibly stressful. And somehow this proposal that I got approved, which I won't go into details with, about like the deck and the patio, whatever, when the which got approved and when the contractor started working on it, some board member who is apparently anonymous, like took pictures of it all and sent me this really mean and nasty note at like 8 o'clock on a Wednesday night telling me I was in violation. And I mean, it was just very stressful. It was like really accusatory and antagonistic. And it was incredibly upsetting at the time. But, when I like, you can poke the bear and I'll be upset, I'll be scared and sad for like 2 seconds. And then I'm going to fight back.
So I'll just confess something. I do have, because this is public, I do have two condo cases pending now friends / clients who have gotten the shaft in some way by their condo association. I have actually a trial over this last year, a bench trial over
counselor.
A condo association that was not reasonable, where my client, there was rainwater coming in, they're leaking through the walls. It was improper. There was no tuck pointing. Essentially, the tuck pointing was not being maintained properly by the association. That was a common element. And so And they breached their fiduciary duty, right? So we ended up having to bring a lawsuit. I had to go to trial, and we won. Got an injunction to force them to do the tuck pointing and everything. Not cheap thing to do. Most people can't do that, but it gives you a sense of, you know, how a condominium association is. Like, it can, the legal fees, you know, we've talked in the past about like how much it costs Trump. We were just talking in this episode, right? Well, think about if your condo association is screwing you in some way and they're not doing what they're supposed to do. How do you vindicate that? Are you really going to hire a lawyer?
Right. That's like where I am right now. Like, I'm like, this is outrageous. And I'm like, by the way, like, look, I'm a single mom of two kids. I'm just like living my life. I'm a good citizen. I'm nice to my neighbors. I help out when I can. I pay my fees. Like, I do all of their, you know, I follow their little authoritarian rules about whatever. Like, I can't have a flower pot on my front porch or whatever. And here I am, you know, under the eye of Sauron. And I, like, it upsets me.
I could tell. It upsets my clients, too. It's just like the eye of Sauron. Wow. It's amazing how much emotion this stuff evokes, because I've seen this with my own clients. I have a single family home now. My old condominium association, we did have some problem people. And I used to talk to them. I would be like the heavy for the association when I was even back when I was a federal prosecutor. I'd be like, look, I'm allowed to represent the association because I am part of it. And so please don't put me in a situation where I have to represent the association for free while you're hiring a lawyer. That would basically be my pitch. Like, please don't put me in this situation. It's a waste of my time, but it's also a waste of your money. But yeah, it's, this stuff evokes a lot of emotion. It's frustrating. I think it's just when people have power, one thing that hopefully everyone's learning from listening to this podcast is exercising power means the other person has to often spend money or find resources or find a champion or something to help them. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah.
This is such an unhappy C block. What's up with that? Those condo associations. I'd be curious, by the way, if any of our listeners have the same thing.
Interested to hear condo association stories and any advice. I have, by the way, now read the bylaws very carefully, and I did write a response to the nastygram that was very reasonable and very polite, offering a compromise solution to what they said, because I didn't provide any like actual written sites or rules for what they were telling me I needed to do. And it's been 11 days. I actually wrote last week and said, I haven't received a response. In the bylaws, if you make a request to do a repair and you do not receive a response within 10 days from the board, you are allowed to proceed with the repair.
No kidding. So are you going to write a confirmatory?
I'm going to say it is my understanding that based on subsection 6.5A5 or whatever it is, I'm going to cite it, I can now extend my patio by 10 inches.
Yeah, one thing I've learned, though, is somebody's represented a lawyer in a condo situation. If you're too savvy and you show up the condo association, then you can egg them on. I'll just say this, and this is because we were kind of touching on this before, and you could disagree with me again. I am very much of like, try to avoid conflict with bullies. If I fight them head on, if I have to, I spend most of my job fighting people who are bullies on behalf of clients or companies that are bullies, or the government if they're a bully, or whatever it might be. But man, de-escalating conflict is often a good idea. Yeah,
but you can't be a doormat.
That is very much true. It's what a balance.
MSW Media.
I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela. You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.